finishing your movie strong is very important. Bohemian Rhapsody finished so strong that it nearly won Best Picture in spite of being a cliched, chaotically edited mess until the moment Freddie Mercury showed up at Live Aid. Mama just killed a man and became the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, I'm Sean Collier. I'm here with two demons who didn't think through this hangout in a box and wait plan. It's Robin Hitchcock.
Pancakes, pancakes, pancakes.
And Camila Adams.
Goodness.
That was The Possession.
Or was it The Possessed? Was it
The Possession? The Possession.
Okay.
Well, I will never remember.
Well, I remember because why, Tony? I mentioned the Letterboxd list last week was horror movies that have the same title.
Right.
It has the same title as the far superior batshit early 80s movie Possession with Sam Neill, which someone is trying to make an ill-advised remake of, announced last week. Goodness. So that's why, Tony.
Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, we landed on 59, just south of Horton Hears a Who, just north of Pain and Gain. But now, big business, because there's this movie that was a giant hit, that won Oscars, that we all saw at the time, I believe.
Yeah.
And here, just 5 years later.
Six years later,
we revisit, and I don't know about you, but I went, ooh.
I liked it.
Oh my.
Me too. Here's the thing.
Like, it's going to be a high score.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, I know that it is so uncool to like this movie.
Right?
I have heard people talk so much shit about this movie, but I have to speak my truth. I enjoy watching it. I have enjoyed watching it two times now.
Samesies.
Yes.
Like, there was nothing about it that stood out to me. That it doesn't feel messy to me.
It does feel messy to me, but in a lovable shaggy dog kind of way. But speaking of shaggy dogs.
You got a shaggy dog.
I got a shaggy dog. Bernadoodle named Sir Winston Poe.
Mm,
a what a doodle?
Burn a doodle.
What is that?
Part Bernese waterhound and poodle.
Oh, the Obamas had one of those.
That's what Dan tells me.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, beautiful dog. Yeah. Back to the movie.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I don't know. I didn't notice any of the filmmaking seeming messy because I think I was taking it as the messy life of Freddy.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know.
I mean,
I like it. And I'm assuming that, you know, one of the big peaks for Robin is the fact that it opens up with a close-up shot of kitties.
Truth. And Colin, I told Colin, hey, tonight I have to watch Bohemian Rhapsody. And he said, I have no interest in that. And I was like, okay. And then he was like, but I'll sit with you. And he very much intended to, like, do work while I was watching the movie. But I said, look at the kitties. And he did. And then he got in it and he fell asleep halfway through, but it's a weirdly long movie.
Yeah.
But kept saying, this is really good. Why do people say this is bad? And I kept saying, like, I don't know, because they're mean and they hate life. Colin or Sean, talk to us about being mean and sad and disliking this shaggy dog movie.
Because
I'm going to agree with everything you say is the problem.
So I think it's every conceivable rock biopic cliche.
100%.
Yeah, hits every point.
Yeah.
And told in a way that avoids any kind of conflict or story or like actual flow to the narrative. It's just some shit happens, Live Aid. Like that's it's the only times in this movie, which we'll get into, the only times in this movie where there's conflict or adversity of any kind is where they made up stuff that didn't actually happen to give the illusion of stakes for a minute.
Like what?
They never broke up. Nobody cared that he made a solo record. They never left EMI.
I had no idea that that was true.
Anything that happens that that provides drama didn't happen in real life.
Now, see, my thing is that I felt the conflict is all inside of Freddy. Like, he's the one that's living this lonely fucking life.
Yeah.
And, like, and he's the one that he's just lonely. And
yeah.
And he's hiding this big secret. And he doesn't know how to express himself. And it's in a fucking horrible time as to what forces him and so many other men and women in the shadows of this lifestyle. And he's just got all these users and hanger-ons around him. And, like, the five people who really fucking care about him, I guess for the movie's sake, he pushes them away or whatnot. And it's just so sad. Like that's the conflict that I feel.
Yeah, I enjoyed the 20 minutes of this 130 minute movie that dealt with that in any way.
I felt like it was throughout, because like it starts with his family not accepting who he is.
But they never actually say anything like his dad's like, be a good boy. Like there's never a real problem between them. There's like some sideways glances, maybe.
I felt like the parents, they could have given them a lot more, but yeah. I think like the whole problem with this movie, like my understanding of it is that Brian May and the other guys whose names I don't remember had their fingers way too deep in this.
Are these
film.
the other members
of okay. Queen. And like, am I getting way ahead of ourselves if we do trailer now?
Go ahead.
All right,
here's the
we're
trailer.
Gonna do the trailer.
Enjoyed the show.
I also write songs.
Our lead singer just quit.
Then you'll need someone new.
I love the way you move on stage. The whole room belongs to you. Don't you see what you could be?
No one will play us on the radio.
We need to get experimental.
Do it again.
One more.
How many more Galileos do you want?
Roger, there's only room in this band for one hysterical queen.
Mark these words. No one will play Queen.
Fortune favors the bold.
Freddy, concerning your private life.
What more do you need to know? I make music.
Ready, Freddy?
Let's do it.
You need to slow down, Fred.
I just need a bit of time.
But if I don't have time?
You're a legend, Fred.
We're all legends.
At the end of the trailer, they say, you're a legend, Freddy. And he says, we're all legends. That's the thesis statement of this film, yeah. Is Queen was not just Freddie Mercury. It was a great collaboration. And people find that embarrassing about this movie. And I find it incredibly charming and meaningful and nice. I like all of the stupid cheesy scenes where it's like, remember the time that I wrote the bass line
right.
for Another One Bites the Dust? Yes. Right, like
nobody liked my I Love My Car,
right? Yes, I like that stuff.
No, that's fine. I have no problem with that, but I think that's answering a complaint I don't think anyone made. Like, yes, Freddie Mercury is a giant presence, but I don't think anyone was ever being like, Queen were just some dudes.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone, you know, truly felt like they didn't contribute to what make I think the only people that felt that way are the members of Queen.
What are each of you's history with Queen?
Great question.
Like
being in America.
Yeah.
Yes, I really like the song Somebody to Love, but I've never owned a Queen album.
Right.
Wow.
I like Queen. I might own one Queen album.
Yeah.
But they've never been like one of my bands.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's never been same. One of mine either. Like I was introduced to them, you know, as I was like 5, 6 years old with Crazy Little Thing Called Love.
Oh, I love that song too.
Yeah. It was on the video on MTV. And, you know, they were never a presence again in my life until I dated this guy who liked to have sex to the Queen album. But,
Which one specifically?
I think it was the Greatest Hits. I don't remember. Yeah, yeah. But
okay. if it's Night at the Opera, that's weird.
We weren't together very long.
Yeah. It's a certain stomp, stomp, clap rhythm to the
right. But proceeding. Yeah, but like it wasn't until like later on in my adult life that, you know, you hear those songs like We Are the Champions and mm-hmm. Ready to Rock You and, or We Want to mm-hmm. whatever. And it's like, oh, this is all the same band. This is all the same people. And I mm-hmm. do enjoy them. And I would say Crazy Little Thing as well as Under Pressure are my
oh, Under Pressure is amazing.
Favorite Queen but that- songs.
That's a Freddie Mercury song, right?
I don't know. No, that's Queen oh, okay. featuring David Bowie.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I'm in the minority. Fortunately, I get to do all the segments. So
I wanted to loop back to the thing about the parents. Is yeah. that I feel like because this movie is actually about Queen, the band, and not about Freddie Mercury, that mm-hmm. they might have been like, we don't actually know.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, I feel like they underplayed his home life because... that's not part of their story, and this is really their story.
Also, I feel like Freddie was probably the type of person who rewrote his home life.
Yeah.
To mm-hmm. his friends.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very good point.
I should also clarify that the intro to each episode of the number one movie in America is a thing I write and don't tell anybody. So if I had known I was in the minority, I wouldn't have been so dismissive in the introduction.
Truthfully, I am coming in embarrassed. Right? I'm like, oh, God, I like this movie. No one else does. So.
Well, I'll up you one. I cried.
Okay, good for you.
I listened to a lot of Queen since I watched it, if that's worth anything. Here's a biased in the minority in this room take on what happens in this movie. Tell me when to go.
Go.
It's 1970. There's this bar band called Smile. They're about to break up, but a lithe bundle of vocal ability, sex, and teeth, soon to be named Freddie Mercury, makes them a giant band almost overnight with no trouble whatsoever. They get a little pretentious and write a wacky song called Bohemian Rhapsody, then quit their label when Austin Powers tells them it's not a single. They get even bigger. Freddie gets way more fabulous and moves his emotional support beard into a neighboring house while starting a toxic relationship with some guy. Things get tense, but they rally on the strength of going stomp, stomp, clap. Things get tense again, but they rally on the strength of a sick baseline. Things get more tense. The press wants Freddie to say he's gay instead of just being gay. Freddie wants a solo record. The band breaks up. Freddie realizes he's in a toxic relationship, breaks up with some guy, then starts a new loving relationship with some other guy. Freddie gets the band back together, and they give the greatest performance of all time at Live Aid. The obligatory post-film title cards acknowledge that Freddie is dead now, but don't worry, there's a charity or something.
Dying. Okay. Yeah, good one. Mm.
First of all,
uh-huh.
I think Freddie Mercury was bisexual.
Well, that's the argument. I mean, okay. He says, I'm bi, maybe, and his fiance is like, shut up, you're gay.
It sounded very much to me like he said, I'm bisexual, and she said, I don't believe in that. You're gay. And I don't like that.
Yeah. But yeah. It also could be that, I don't know.
I mean, you got the impression that they had sex.
Yeah. You got the impression that he deeply loved her.
Yeah. Well, it could also be that he was just her.
That was something totally about a her thing that happens.
Because we never really, I mean, we don't know, but they never get into anything like, oh yeah, he also like fucked around with a bunch of women too.
Right.
It just seemed like, you know, he was very homosexual, but was in love with Mary.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was something special with them. And Freddie just seemed, he was a real special, complicated individual.
He's a complicated man.
I do think that is one of the big weaknesses of this movie mm-hmm. is that they hand wave a lot of his sexuality mm-hmm. with like, he was just a queer man. You know what I mean? Without, and in a way that feels like disinterested in it, which is rude.
And, you know, I don't know. I don't know how far you go in taking points away for this, but gladly removed gay shit from the cut to send it to countries that wouldn't like that.
Right.
Oh, you mean like actual sex stuff or what?
No, they pulled content out of this movie that more directly implied that Freddie Mercury from the band Queen is gay. When they sent it to China and the Middle East, like those countries got shorter versions of the movie that cut out even more of his sexuality. Yes.
I swear, some people, like all of the, every fucking, like 85% of the popular men in the 80s mm-hmm. gave off a wave of gay, if not were actually gay.
Yes.
Like we were dealing with the androgyny and the transgender.
We had a big old horseshoe of masculinity happening.
Right. And everyone's, oh my God, George Michael is gay? Yeah. What?
It's all of these fucking boomers that that right now are running on their Facebooks and and say, oh, we didn't, this transgender, it's a fad. It's like, when did Prince say, I'm not a woman, I'm not a man? Right. When did Lou Reed said shaved his legs and then he was a she? When did the Kinks say boys will be girls and girls will be boys? When you were a kid and you were into it. Exactly. Like, what?
Anyway. Have you met Annie Lennox?
Do we need to call Grace Jones about this? Right. She's alive, right?
Yes, I think so.
Good. She sure is.
Yeah, great.
I mean, Tony, please. Protect Grace Jones.
Watch, look up Grace Jones on the Pee Wee Christmas special. It's really the peak of Western culture.
Somebody sent you something gigantic.
I hope it's not a fruitcake.
Okay, Pee Wee.
Grace Jones.
Wait a minute. You're not the president.
But yeah, I know I probably wouldn't have liked the other version of this movie, which I'll explain that in the Faxi segment imminently. But I probably wouldn't like a version that's way more upfront about his sexuality, that's all about his sexuality. That probably would feel gross too. Mm-hmm. But the way it's handled here is like, woman, men, shame, AIDS, dead. Like, it's just such it is treated as additional singles on the chronology.
Yeah. Mm. The scene in this movie, which makes me remember that this movie is not good, is when he collects his friends and goes, I've got it.
Oh, yeah, his announcement.
Like, yes. And the way that is shot and the, like, going back to the chaotic editing, like, the deal with the chaotic editing, I don't know if you know this, is that, like, because the members of Queen had their fingers too deep in this movie, they were apparently in the editing room like, you should cut to me now. And
no one's ever said that on the record, but yes, that's the conspiracy theory, which seems very believable watching the movie.
And it is one of those, like, you know that How I Met Your Mother episode where they learn the annoying thing about their friends and they do a glass breaking sound effect and then that's all they can notice?
Yeah.
It is a glass breaking thing when you know that watching this movie. Because every goddamn scene, it's like, and now the kid from Jurassic Park.
Thank you. Because I never did look it up, actually. And I was like, this is the kid from Jurassic Park. Yes. And that's all I thought about every time he shows up.
Yes.
And yet, for all of that effort, I've now seen this twice. I'm still like, okay, Freddie, Brian May, and the Dickie? Other ones.
Dinky?
His name is John Dookie? Deacon, and they call him Deaky.
Deaky.
And the other one is named Roger something. Taylor?
Sure, that sounds okay. Right.
That's from Duran Duran.
Oh. Anyway, I think he's named
Roger.
Listen,
Roger the drummer.
The other members of Queen.
And only two of the, only Brian and Roger are still in Queen to this day.
Oh, really?
Couldn't say.
Which brings me to, why, Tony?
Mm. Why, Tony?
Because they're coming here to Pittsburgh. That's
I'd probably go.
That Queen and Adam Lambert.
I was just going to say, do they still tour with Adam Lambert? What? That is the correct placement of Adam Lambert.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Where, like, I like one of his songs by himself.
Yes.
Sure, but yes, where else was he going to go? Honestly.
They did it. They found a good spot for him.
I would go to I would go to that. If it were easy, if that's a Star Lake or like a complicated parking situation or costs $200, exactly. No. But if you make it easy for me, oh yeah, I'll be there.
Wait, is Star Lake not easy? We don't have time for
this. It takes forever to get
in
and out.
We don't have time for this.
And I'll jump to the last fact because it's why, Tony. They just sold their catalog.
Oh.
For $1.2 billion.
Holy cats.
To which, whom?
Yeah.
To some.
Paul McCartney.
No, it's that's what I mean. You're more than forgiven for not having noticed this thing, but legacy artists basically keep selling their publishing rights to, you know, just
the guys who make car ads,
investors.
Yeah.
Because then those people can, you know, sell it to commercials and sell it to movies and sell it to license it all over forever, long after these people are dead. So they're like, well, yeah, I'll take $1.2 billion now to give up the rights to control what commercial can play Fat Bottom Girls. And then, you know, you'll make that money back over time.
I don't think that I could be a rock star because for many reasons, but I would have a lot of trouble with letting people put my music in their ads.
And just like anything. Like I would I would literally have to be, no, what is this product? What?
Yeah. Our wedding dance song is in an Expedia ad right now and it keeps coming up and I keep like having this moment of my heart warming and then being like, this feels gross.
What? You got a problem with Expedia? Come on. Bohemian Rhapsody was released November 2nd, 2018, the 27th number one movie of that year. It won that first weekend with $51 million, beating fellow debuts The Nutcracker and The Four Realms. Oh. Second place.
That's a movie that I saw in the theater on the off chance that it would get an Oscar nomination, which it did not.
It did not.
Yes.
Nobody's Fool was in third, $13.7 million. This what? Is just, that's a Tiffany Haddish thing.
It's also a pretty good Paul Newman movie from the 90s.
Just a 1 week number one movie. I thought it was more.
Oh, no, wow. I would have too.
It fell to second the following week.
I was so ready to cross that bingo square off. Oh.
Yeah. And the animated Grinch. The animated Grinch is a shockingly big hit. There's some measure where the animated Grinch is the best grossing Christmas movie of all time.
Jeez, OP.
A new animated one?
Yeah, with
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah. I liked it. Kaj was really into it this year.
That's good.
That said, Bohemian Rhapsody, very big hit. It made $216 million domestic and a shocking $687 million elsewhere in the world. Global total of more than $903 million this movie made.
That's almost one Queen catalog.
Exactly. Yeah. Still only 10th overall for 2018. I know that we've let a cat out of a bag, hat, rabbit. I don't know which metaphor I'm using, but I know the box office has changed. But just remember these 6 short years ago where the number one movie was Black Panther with $700 million, narrowly beating out an Avengers that made $678. Then Incredibles 2 making $608. A Jurassic Park making $417. Aquaman $335. Deadpool 2 $318. The Grinch $271. A Mission Impossible $220. And Ant-Man $216. Barely edging Bohemian Rhapsody at $216.4 million. Please start going back to the movie theaters, people. Mm. It's a fun thing to do.
Yes, sure is.
It's a good way to spend your time. And it's not that long ago. I know there was a COVID and you got used to watching things at home.
There was a whole COVID. Or most of COVID.
A whole panini.
Expensive baubles.
Okay.
Expensive baubles.
All right, so Rami Malek won Best Actor. We'll get to it. This was nominated for, and I agree with you, almost won Best Picture. And then, did it win editing?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. And then both sounds. Is that right?
This. Yes. Correct.
And am I missing anything?
No. Nominated for 5. It won actor, editing, both sounds.
So it won 4 out of 5.
Yes.
That's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. Editing that.
The editing thing. People really. This is when I really heard this narrative of like Brian May was in the editing room.
Yeah.
Being mean, and the editors branch, like they are gossipy bitches, and they were like, you gotta just hand it to these guys. They had the worst experience. That's the story, and even if that's not true, I want to believe it.
Well, and part of it...
my canon.
Yes, correct.
Part of it was, to get to the directing thing, the credited director on this movie is the since-canceled Bryan Singer. Mm. He was fired from this film.
I was going to say, didn't Dexter Fletcher really direct this? Isn't this one of those situations?
No, it's Bryan Singer directed at least half and maybe more than that.
Okay.
But then he was constantly fighting with Rami Malek. He was fighting with other crew members. He's clearly just a dick and was feuding with everybody on set and eventually packed up his shit and went home and made up some story about a sick family member, but just was gone. So they fired him. There are a couple of weeks where the cinematographer, Newton Thomas Siegel was directing the movie. Mm. And eventually they got Dexter Fletcher, who also did the Elton John movie. And at one point earlier in production was attached to this movie, came in. He says he did about a third of it.
Was Tom Hollander also in the Elton John movie? Is this a cinematic universe is basically what I'm asking.
I think so.
Yeah. Was he playing the same character?
No.
Okay, because they were like, we got to go meet this guy. He takes care of Elton John. And then it's Tom Hollander. And I'm like, wasn't he in the Elton John movie?
Yeah, it's not. I want you want to connect them all and then they go meet Amy Winehouse in the future.
Yes.
And it's, but
listen, I'd be here for it.
Yeah, it's more interesting than a lot of things we are getting. The reason why it just says directed by Bryan Singer is Directors Guild of America rules.
Yeah.
There can only be one credited director on a movie. Unless it's a
co-directing the Daniels.
Right.
Right.
And that generally goes to whoever did more of it. That said, what I've heard is that the editing Oscar went to, I'm sorry, I didn't write down this editor's name, because he had to pull together all of this shit from three different directors with Brian May screaming in his ear. And just the fact that it worked, they're like, man,
God bless you.
What a job you did.
But yeah, I don't like it as a member of the Oscars fandom. I do not like when people can say the Oscars are bullshit. See, Bohemian Rhapsody won best editing. And here's this clip of them meeting at lunch and everybody's face keeps being shown. Right. So,
yeah, it is frustrating that someone broke it down and said there are more edits in that scene than in whatever was then the climactic scene of the most recent Transformers movie. So they cut more often than robots fighting. And Best Picture, I mean, it didn't seem this way at the time, but looking back, this was a weird ass Best Picture race.
This was one of the weirdest Oscar years ever.
I thought Black Panther was going to win.
After Black Panther won the SAG cast ensemble, yeah. I was like, it could happen.
Green Book and Bohemian Rhapsody split the Golden Globes in the wrong categories.
I remember that.
Bohemian Rhapsody won Best Drama, and Green Book won Comedy or Musical.
I mean, Green Book is a comedy.
Yeah.
He folds that pizza in half. That is the thing I remember.
It happens in The Whale, too. That's not a comedy. Anyway. But so clearly people were voting for Black Panther. You know, the prestige vote was probably split three ways between Roma, the favorite, and Black Klansman.
Yeah.
So they kind of all canceled each other out. Black Panther probably had a lot of votes, but there's a lot of voters who are never going to vote for a superhero movie no matter what. So that Vice was never in it. But even then, you're left with Green Book, Bohemian Rhapsody, and A Star Is Born being the, like, what's the normie pick?
Right.
And I think that this had to be the most, like, ranked choice, like, sanding out ever. And yet, you heard people say after the fact, if it had been a straight vote, Green Book still would have won.
I remember you telling me that, because this Oscars, by the way, Sean was at my house watching these Oscars, and then he had to go to be on TV. Mm-hmm. And he was like, text me if anything interesting happens. And like the minute he left, Olivia Colman won. And
the upset
more importantly, Glenn Close lost. And so I was like, yeah, Sean!
Yeah.
And I was still riding the, oh my God, Olivia Colman won, Glenn Close lost. Hi, when Green Book won. And I was like, I don't even have brain space to care about this. And then, like, the next day, I was like, oh, God, Green Book won Best Picture. That's embarrassing.
I feel like Bohemian Rhapsody would have been equally embarrassing.
More embarrassing, maybe. I'm going to end with saying I think I'd be less embarrassed for Bohemian Rhapsody to be a Best Picture winner. Ooh. Because it is mom cinema and people like movies. Sometimes movies are
musical biopics.
Right. People like movies. And sometimes a movie just is fun and you like it and it wins Best Picture. Right.
But this
Gladiator
isn't even one of the, like, Rocket Man is a much better one of these than this.
Oh, God.
Is.
I like this so much more than Rocket Man.
Facts.
Yes.
This was originally greenlit in the early teens, when Sacha Baron Cohen was going to be playing Freddie Mercury.
Oh, my.
And Stephen Frears was directing.
Different movie.
Yeah.
Yes. Queen says that fell apart because Sacha Baron Cohen insisted on a gritty R-rated biopic that would be almost entirely about Mercury's sexuality and almost not about the band. Sacha Baron Cohen, who is emerging as more and more of an asshole as time goes on, but he says it fell apart. It fell apart because at the time, Queen was insisting that Freddie Mercury die in the middle of the movie and half of the movie be about Queen enduring and continuing to exist post Freddie Mercury.
That's gross.
I'm sure it's a little from column A, a little from column B. In any case, eventually Sacha Baron Cohen left. It fell into development hell before it was pulled out and handed to Bryan Singer. We already talked about that. So, some of the wild inaccuracies throughout, and a lot of this is purported to be fairly accurate, but there's some big ones. Chief among them, No one was upset about Freddie Mercury doing a solo album. Two other members of the band had already done solo albums at that point. Brian May had two solo albums out at that point.
Doing what? Was he singing?
No, he was like, you know, like Slash does. Like, I'm going to play the guitar and bring some people in and whatever. In fact, the band never broke up. The band still has never broken up.
Wow.
And at the time that they were coming up on Live Aid, they had just completed a world tour. It ended 2 weeks prior. The album The Works, which is a big album, that's what Radio Gaga, Hammer to Fall, I Want to Break Free are all on The Works, was the new Queen album that they were touring in support of. Wow. There is no, oh, we're rusty, we have to get back into shape. His voice was fine. He wasn't really feeling the effects of AIDS at that point.
Hammer to Fall being in that set list, I was like, what is this song? It makes so much more sense knowing it's new stuff.
It's the new single.
Oh, that's what you put in the second slot.
So basically all of that, like, I'm sure they had fights and differences, but like there was no serious drama in the band ever.
That's so fascinating, because I thought I was more embarrassed by thinking that they had broken up and then they got to tell the story and they got to tell it as Freddie came and begged for our forgiveness and we humbly gave it to him, which is what it kind of comes across as in the movie. Yeah. What a demented lie to tell.
Exactly.
Yes.
Not only that, they never left EMI, and Bohemian Rhapsody was released as the first single from that
album. Released as the first single.
Yes.
I don't understand. Yeah, because it was questionable to me, like, why this dude would have a problem with that, because radio stations, DJs need a pee break. So you need a song that's going to be longer than 3-4 minutes.
I am convinced the only reason that's there is because they got Mike Myers and we could have the meta moment. Saying,
teenagers are going to rock out to this in the
car.
I
will say, when you ask, like, what's your personal history with Queen, I do think Wayne's World being my Roman Empire does make Queen more important.
Probably.
Yeah. Yes.
But that's just another thing that was in there to add a spot of drama, you know. But, I mean, the first hour, they didn't even bother. The first hour was just everything's coming up Queen. And they made it 45 whole minutes without reverting to names of cities flashing by.
I don't know. Yeah, I
but
mean,
Pittsburgh
I know
came up.
Yeah, automatic, plus one for Pittsburgh being one of the cities and them saying, we love you, Pittsburgh.
You know, it's just what I expect. Like, yeah, it's like it hit every beat of what
sometimes
was supposed to happen.
The formula works.
Right.
Other thing, the last thing, Queen are generally regarded, this I would not have guessed, Queen are the fifth best-selling artist of all time.
I would not have guessed that either.
They have sold at least 250 million albums.
Isn't their greatest hits album in particular, like, one of those albums that everyone secretly owns? Yes. I don't own it, but...
They are only definitely beaten by the Beatles, Michael Jackson, Elvis, and Elton John.
Holy shit. Only
people who have definitely sold more albums
Prince?
Than Queen. Yes.
Madonna?
Madonna is close. That's in that, like, Madonna has sold about 250 million albums. Queen has maybe sold a few more, but it's impossible to know. But yes, in if you look at charts, usually Queen's above Madonna.
Well, I think it's also one of those, like, Queen kind of feels like one of those bands that gets handed to you when you register for college.
Yeah.
Here's where the student union is.
Are you familiar with the Doors?
Right.
Yeah, I'm glad y'all had a better time than I did.
Listen, this movie's not good. Like, I feel like one of the unwashed masses by enjoying this movie, and yet here I am, unwashed, masked.
I do not mean to challenge your own perception of your enjoyment. I think it has a lot to do with Live Aid, because Live Aid, that sequence
100%
is perfect.
Oh, it's flawless.
That
absolutely
is the best fictionalized concert I've ever seen in any movie.
It is a full-on great concert movie.
Yeah.
Because it's literally just recreating it, right?
Yeah.
Which, so, good job whoever
directed
the original performance. Oh, also shout out, who's the guy who ran Live Aid? His name is escaping.
Bob Geldof.
The guy who plays Bob Geldof in this movie is so cute. And I just love that they were like, we're not going to give him any lines, but we're just going to put him there looking concerned and then looking thrilled.
That was one thing that I thought, this has to be bullshit, this idea that they were running behind and then Queen played, and it's actually, that appears to be what actually happened.
Really?
Like, they were lagging a little bit early in the day.
Oh, wow. I love that.
And he eventually said, like, he eventually came in and yelled, Bob Geldof went on TV and yelled at people because they weren't giving enough money around the time the Queen played and the combined forces there. But that whole thing is so good that it tricked me into giving it a positive review the first time I saw it. And even this time I was like, oh, I feel great now.
Right.
Why?
I also, when Colin and I watch things together, if they have a good opening, we say dope opening, which has been shortened to dopening.
Yeah.
And that opening is dope.
It's yeah. a dope opening.
No, right? It is.
They're hitting, like, it's got that music video feel where, like, the edits are hitting with the music. As I said, yeah. This is also, like, one of my favorite songs. So yeah. The cats, him jumping to get on the stage.
Getting hyped up.
Yes. Goosebumps. Yes. Sorry. I'm basic.
There are just certain things about, like, musical biopics. And also, another thing with this one is that, and for whatever reason, and I don't know if it's just like I've watched some shitty ones, but I feel like it's not as often that you see in music biopics the musician's music being used to emphasize the story as opposed to just, and now we're recording this song, you know? And I like that about this is that, you know, it was a really great usage of a lot of the Queen music. And it's just, I think, and also, I don't know how we haven't talked about it, but Rami, I think he did a really great job as Freddie. Like, the teeth are distracting,
teeth are very bad.
But Freddie's teeth were distracting.
Have
you watched some interviews?
I
had to go, I was like, let me just see. Because I don't, you know,
Mary Beth's contribution, when I was like, but do you want to watch it? She said, oh, no. And just went about her business. But she walked through the room once and he said, does he keep those teeth in his mouth through the whole movie? I'm like, yeah.
I mean, the ladies, don't let him near you. Give you a hysterectomy. They're just out here.
If anything, it's more concerning with his other partners.
I know. I don't know how.
I would 100%, if I were a billionaire, be like, somebody make me this movie, but CGI the teeth out.
I feel like it's hard to tell if he's doing it. I think he's pretty good. I don't think he's great, but honestly, I think he's fine.
It is impossible for me to evaluate it as a performance because, to me, he is just being a captivating weirdo. And like,
he's very good at being a captivating weirdo.
And Freddie Mercury was also a captivating weirdo, so it works. Because I'm not a Queen super fan, I don't know if he was exactly the same kind of captivating weirdo. And also, I don't know if being a captivating weirdo is necessarily great acting. But also, going back to, like, Green Book won Best Picture, like, if Rami Malek didn't win this Oscar, Christian Bale would win a fucking Oscar for playing fucking Dick Cheney in fucking Vice.
No, I would not. That would not be.
We don't need that.
Rami did the damn thing. And for what I know about Rami, he's not. That's not things I've usually seen him in. He's a captivating weirdo, but he's a quiet and withdrawn weirdo. Freddie is out there and he's all, you know, and he's giving it all and he's performing. Like, just the fact that he's doing the Freddie Mercury performances on stage, that's what really sold it for me.
Yes.
Not just him in his everyday, it's him doing the Live Aid concert.
You're so right. You are so right, because the Live Aid concert sequence being as good as it is because Rami Malek is like, here is my concentrated star power.
Right. Exactly.
Which is something, as we have discussed, I do think people deserve Oscars for.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't believe how forcefully I'm coming. Like, I know, we are gassing each other up. Also.
I know, I think so. I didn't think I was going to come this hard for Bohemian Rhapsody. Like,
I thought I was going to come in here and be like, guys, I'm so embarrassed. I do kind of like this movie. And now I'm like, greatest cinematic achievement.
Sometimes, you know, we elevate or depress one another's scores. I will assure you that has not happened today.
Okay, good.
In fact,
I'm going to try to push back against what's happening.
Maybe we should listen to We Will Rock You real quick.
I went back and looked at my Critics' Choice ballot for last year because I was like, did I sneak Rami Malek in? In fact, Christian Bale and Vice was my number one.
Oh,
why?
It was a deeply contrary ballot. I went Christian Bale, then John David Washington in Black Klansman, who did not get a nomination. And then Ethan Hawke in First Reformed. Okay. I was just in a mood.
I can get behind First Reformed movie I do not like. Ethan Hawke in First Reformed performance amazing. I love.
Christian Bale won the Critics' Choice Award, and Bohemian Rhapsody went 0 for 3. I think it wasn't nominated for Best Picture. Roma won.
Holy cow.
It was actor, I want to say, sound and maybe hair and makeup, who looked at the teeth and said, fellow critic, at least we didn't give it anything.
Like the Brian May wig, very much.
They did a really good job of casting yes. those guys.
I'll give the costumes to them.
Costumes were good, too. Yeah. I remembered Lily James being in this movie. That being said, I think that Lucy Boynton, who actually is in this movie, is quite good.
Yeah.
She is.
And it reminded me that I've never finished Sing Street, and I really need to.
People like that movie.
Yes.
I haven't seen it. The Letterboxd list is movies where the director can't be fucking bothered to show us a character is dying properly, so they just have them cough some blood into a hanky or have a nosebleed.
Come on. That's another thing. I like that we didn't go into his dying days.
Oh, it would be very, very, very sad.
Yeah.
I really like when he gets the diagnosis and he passes the other patient and they have the little AO.
Yeah.
The gaga moment.
That I did like.
Yeah.
I'm about to tear up.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Give me your scores.
93. Because
holy crap.
It made me cry. Like anything that pulls tears from me is automatically above 85.
I am going to say 69 and with deep shame.
I landed on 52, then added the Pittsburgh point for 53.
The Pittsburgh point.
Can we reveal the one bingo square that we are for sure going to be checking off next week?
No.
No.
Okay.
I muttered the word Twitter. You can all take it from there.
Never mind.
I mean, maybe not. Maybe there's more people on board with this than I am thinking.
So, like, honestly, everybody, please, whoever's listening and whoever is on Twitter, let us know your opinion, please, because I need to know.
71.67.
Listen, sometimes basic things are good.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Not this one, but some of them. I mean, I wasn't negative, and really, were it not for, I think if this had a bad ending, yeah, I would have given it a 38. Oh. But Live Aid really pulls it up.
Yeah. Also, wait, I do want to say the way that they treat his boyfriend as just being the worst human on earth,
Paul.
Yes.
It wasn't just really his boyfriend.
Or okay, his toxic hanger. Right. I just feel. I highly doubt that guy was that awful, and I feel really bad for him.
I don't. I believe okay. it. I've seen enough firsthand, like celebrity use and abuse that I believe that was the case, and especially in that time, in that day and era.
All right. Well, then fuck Paul.
Right. Fuck that guy.
To the aforementioned bingo card, I don't think
there's anything.
Was this Dexter Fletcher's first movie?
No.
Mm.
Oh, SNL cast. Mike Myers.
Oh, yay!
There you go.
I totally didn't even register. Hooray.
Yeah, that's all I got. I mean, the year 1985 certainly appears in this film, but we'll have to lightning round. I apologize to the listener and my co-host that I have to get out the door on this recording day, so we might be doing the quick version of You Can't Handle the Truth.
Okay. I got one movie.
Go right ahead.
The Strangers, Chapter 1.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
it's fine. you know, it's not as good as the original one. It's the subtlety in the original one. That is what I love. This mm-hmm. one does not have the subtlety.
The way you just said fine.
Fine.
Was so hostile.
I'm a little perturbed that it exists, but I'm going to go on this ride because, you know, it ends differently than the original one. And obviously we've got two more that are coming. So I will take me on this journey.
All right.
We both, Robin and I, saw Inside Out 2.
I liked it more than Inside Out, but I didn't love Inside Out, so I think this is a solid B-plus movie. Okay. Everybody's already seen it. It's actually making money.
It's so... I one theater owner, who I will not name, that I know, I truly thought, like, I think this guy might retire and shut down his movie theater. Like a few weeks ago when everything was bombing.
Yeah.
And I saw him last weekend, and it was like the life had gone back into his face. Good. He said it's this year's Barbie. I mean, and the numbers reflect that. I liked it a lot, and it's funny, and it's a great representation of anxiety without being devastating. This is not one of those Pixar movies where I was a mess at the end. I was just like, I do feel a little validated by some of what you've done, and yet I feel okay to go about my day.
Anhui, MVP.
Anhui is so good.
Yeah.
Played by what's her name? Not Lea Seydoux, but the Adele Exarchopoulos.
Yeah.
The girl from Bear? Or, yeah, the Bear?
The girl? No.
The girl from the Bear plays... Ayo Edebiri plays...
One of the characters?
The Envy.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Gosh, that woman likes to work.
Yeah.
Adele from Blue is the Warmest Color. Oh, she's a French actress. Okay. Yeah.
It's good. It's funny. You probably pulled my score down a little bit because... Like,
oh, yeah.
First, the only thing about it is, like, first you have to ask yourself... Okay, this is about teenage emotions, and it's presented in a sexless world. They're like, here are the new emotions that show up when you're a teenager. Anxiety, envy, and boredom. And it's like, what's missing?
Horniness.
Exactly. And I understand, like, this is a Disney movie. You would have to be very careful with how you presented that. But, Robin, make the point so I'm not just repeating you.
I think that Riley is queer-coded. And
a lot of people do.
Yeah, I'm not the first person to say this. And the movie is with her going to hockey camp and, like, basically having a crush on the cool girls at hockey camp.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's this whole storyline about her having a deep, dark secret, which I thought was like, oh, this is for every queer person watching this to latch onto.
Right.
As her deep, dark secret is that she is gay. And then they reveal the deep, dark secret at the post-credits scene, and it's something really stupid.
It's like she lit the rug on fire when she was younger.
And I just felt like kind of...
cheated?
Yes, exactly. And then I was like, they're releasing this in fucking Pride Month. Like, this is just mean. It just feels mean.
Yeah.
And then I also just kept thinking about how Pete Docter was like, we're not going to make any more of these director's personal stories movies like Turning Red, which is a much better movie about being a teenage girl and directly addresses horniness.
Yeah.
Teen horniness is not a crime.
No, it's...
And they managed to pull it off tastefully.
Yeah.
I understand that... It has to be done tastefully and carefully, particularly with DeSantis and all of that bullshit. But like, it just felt like you're leaving this out. And it felt like that was why. It felt like they all know that she's queer. And and they were like, oh, I guess we can't address this foundational part of teenage life because that would be to acknowledge that this existing character is not.
I'll wait for part three.
All that said, it's a good movie, and I'm glad everyone's seeing it, and I hope you do, if you haven't. What else have you?
I watched Hitman on Netflix, the new Richard Linklater
Everybody's
movie.
Talking about that.
How was that?
To borrow one of your classic banger reviews, I liked everything about it except for the plot.
Classic.
There were definitely times with the plot where I was like, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? But I really... Glenn Powell... So charming. Yeah. So charming.
He's great.
Liz said yesterday when I was talking about this movie, she's like, he seems like an AI-generated movie star. And I was like, agreed, but I'm going to put complimentary in parens after that.
The robot was doing well that
Correct.
Day. This isn't one of the ones where the cheeks are in the wrong place. This is like, good job there.
There's sex in it, right? Like, it feels like a movie from the 90s. Complimentary.
Yeah.
But... The plot's just kind of goofy in ways that you have to, like, shake your face about a lot. But that being said, I kind of got more emotionally invested in it than I expected to because a lot of it is about, like, why does he do this? Because it gives him meaning and a creative outlet and lets him define who he is and all of this stuff. And, like, I probably have a career change coming up and I'm like... Oh, well, this is giving me thoughts and feelings. So, anyway, I do recommend it.
As a hit woman,
or the boring version, a process server. You could pull that off. That's improv.
I am very approachable.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Anything else?
I don't think so. Oh, I watched the Despero episodes of Psych. Nice. That's like my, I watched Twin Peaks The Return, but for Camila, because they had Psych on Jamaican Netflix, and I was like, well, I need to watch these so that I, and great. That show's just so charming.
I love it so.
The Hitman also kind of reminded me, or Hitman, it doesn't have a the in front of it. Similar vibes to Psych.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. You will like it, okay. I think.
We restarted The Return again, so I'll check back. Great. But I am firmly insisting on watching these one a week, as the director did not intend, but Robin intended. The Bike Riders is pretty good.
Yeah.
You don't need to run out. I mean, I know that I'm...
I wanted to go to the screening, but it's just too far out.
I it doesn't take that long to get... To, anyway, from here it would be a little longer. You can cut all that. That's local traffic talk.
Wait, which
Welcome
theater?
To local
it
traffic
It was in Robinson.
Talk.
Oh, yeah,
which
that is
a bit
far.
Of a drive yeah. from here, admittedly. I know that I'm... keep making the point again and again, go to the movie theater, and yet every now and then you run into one where it's like, you don't need to go to the movie theater for The Bike Riders. Tom Hardy's great. I don't need to tell you that.
No, you don't. So how's Tom? How's he doing?
The whole cast is great. The whole cast is good looking, except for Norman Reedus, who they have to fight against, so they give him those little like chiclet teeth, like a fake tooth, because he's supposed to be weird and off-putting.
I think he's doing well on weird and off-putting already.
You know, it's one of those movies that is just a little bit more, it's just a little overthought. Mm. Like, this is basically based on a book of photography. Huh. There's this famous influential book guy who went around photographing bikers in the 50s. Ooh. And this is based on that. Huh. So they write in that photographer as a character.
That's a little necessary.
To justify him like constantly doing interviews, and that's how we get all of the exposition and narration. But it's like, or you could have just made an 87-minute biker movie and called it a day.
Yeah, that was unnecessary.
But when it's going, it's good, and it's kind of, you know, got a little gritty crime drama feel to it, but in a way that feels fresh, and it's really well shot. It's that guy who's like a quiet auteur. Who did Mud and did...
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, what's his name?
I don't remember.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I recommend it just fine. You know what's not bad is just kind... It's getting a bad rap. It's Russell Crowe in The Exorcism.
You know what? I swear I thought that movie came out in the theaters like 2 years ago.
See, what you're thinking of is Russell Crowe in The Pope's Exorcist. A different... movie
Wait
with Russell Crowe as a priest.
Wait a second.
So here's what happened. This movie is called The Exorcism. It is about some dumb director, played very well here by Adam Goldberg, decides he's going to remake The Exorcist. And no one wants to do it, so he hires Russell Crowe's character, who's like a recovering alcoholic and has ruined his career. And then, like, the, oh, we're doing a Satan movie, the set is cursed, spooky shit starts happening, but it's all like, is this guy just a drunk, or is he possessed? And
That sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah.
It definitely is a good movie for half of it, and then just goes to screaming at demons and, you know, creepy lights and flashing, you know. It chooses to go bland toward the end, but it gets along pretty well for a while. The thing is, they filmed most of this in late 2019, early 2020.
Damn.
And then had to stop and didn't get it going again. In the meantime, Russell Crowe made a completely unrelated Exorcist movie.
Hilarious.
And then came back to finish this other Exorcist movie. So
I wonder if he can even keep them straight.
Right.
Yeah. It's the same costume, same scraggly beard. But a lot of people are like, this is terrible. I'm like, that was a fine way to kill. This was like one of those days where I was like, I need to go to the drive-in to heal my soul.
Yes.
And like, I just managed to get there on time. The temperature just dropped just enough to get comfortable. So it could have been the circumstances, but I kind of liked it. I haven't seen Quiet Place Part Zero yet. So
Part Zero.
I'll report back on that. And I left my phone in the car, so I don't know what else I watched on my Letterboxd.
Letterboxd server has been down all day.
Oh my God.
At least for me. I don't know.
Help.
Sometimes you just need to log out and log back in.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there was something weird that I saw too. I haven't watched a lot of movies because I've been super, super busy.
Mm. I've been just catching up on a lot of new shows right now. And I would suggest Presumed Innocent on Apple.
I really like that movie with Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Based on the same source material. This is the show that I feel like I need to wait till all the episodes are out. And yeah. then watch it all together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm really, I got tricked. And I was like, there were three episodes
I hate when that happens.
And then I was like, what's next? All right, let's do the fourth one. They're like, see you next Wednesday.
Yeah. Yep. But the problem is sometimes I say, I'm going to wait till all the episodes are out and then watch it. And then I forget to watch. Like, I still haven't watched Shogun, which no. I really want to watch at some point. But I'm bad at watching TV.
I am trying to get better. And my way of getting better is I'm just watching every Twilight Zone. Like, I'm like, these are short. I love them. I can get in the habit of once a day. And then maybe by the time I watch the, you know, four different series and all the spinoffs and everything, I will be in the habit. And I can talk to you both about TV.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Until now. That is, unless you really want to talk about Twilight Zone.
We got to get you out of here.
The other thing you watched is Suitable Flesh. I was able to pull up your Letterboxd.
That's not worth talking about.
Okay, great. Yeah. All right, we got to get out of here.
The important thing is that there's a Maxine screening a week from That's today. Right. It's like my Ooh. Christmas.
Did I get invited to that? Because I want to go.
I did. This is just the second one, right? Was it X and...
Pearl was the second one.
Pearl, okay, so it's X, Pearl, and this.
Yeah, but the sequential order is... Pearl is the prequel, so the chronological order is Pearl X Maxine. This is a direct sequel to X.
Okay.
Tight.
More on that next time. For now, let's draw a movie. Notice how I was in a big hurry, and then I just started saying random things. It's the heat. Your brain melts.
Sort it out.
Well, next time... Oh. We are going down a road that we have not yet really gone down.
Interesting.
And yet I have... So much to say. You both don't even need to show up. I can do the whole thing myself because we're talking about Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
Fucking God.
Not the first one, but the second one.
I don't want to do this.
It's a pretty good one. Basilisk.
Have you
Riddle's Diary.
Beyonce,
why won't you release your movie?
Robin, have you seen any of them?
I've seen five of them, I think.
Okay. I haven't seen any of them.
Do
I need to watch the first one?
No.
I mean, the first one is charming, but it's like, hey, here's this kid named Harry Potter. Like, that's the entire point of the first one.
So what's this one called that we're doing?
Chamber of Secrets. The second one.
Okay.
You know, I need to put my loathing and yet loathing for J.K. Rowling and complicated feelings about her creations on the record somewhere so I can maybe exercise it a little bit. So this is a good opportunity for me personally. So
everybody get your muggle warts out?
Muggle wart? Well...
I don't know. Aren't there houses or something? I just came off as a real mom there, didn't I?
Once again, I wish that we had video because the face that Sean is making is so...
No, it's why it's... Listen, even if I could be like, what do you mean you don't know about it?
Is it a Hufflepuff?
I'm a Hufflepuff, yes.
Okay, all right, that's right. Sorry.
Muggles are non-magical people. Muggle wort is just a thing you made up, but I like it. It's like in the world of her incredibly basic naming things, muggle wort would be like a tea you give to a wizard 100%. To make them not a wizard for a little while.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you? You're a Ravenclaw, right?
No, Slytherin. Apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't know, do you?
I have no.
You know what I am? I like trans people. That's what I am.
So much to get into.
But I guess in the spirit of this thing, I'll find some online quiz and take it. And we'll find out next time.
Get big Gryffindor energy. I will be surprised if it's anything but Gryffindor.
Okay.
Trans women are women. That said, I'm a Hufflepuff and I was once proud. Bohemian Rhapsody, November 2nd, 2018. What was the number one song in America?
Was it Drake? Good.
Ariana Grande?
I told you. History is rewriting itself to take his number ones away.
There's so many of them.
No.
Ed Sheeran?
No. Your hint is we've had this recently because we did a movie that was very adjacent. That was maybe 7 weeks before Bohemian Rhapsody.
Post Malone?
No.
Cardi B?
No. Yes. Wait. Yes. But she's the right. featuring.
She's the featuring.
Oh, and it was Maroon 5.
Yeah. Maroon 5 featuring Cardi B. Girls Like You.
Yes.
Began its reign about 7 weeks prior when Night School was the number one movie in America and was still number one when Bohemian Rhapsody. I hoped that. Bonus quiz to go home. What are Queen's two number one songs in America? There are only two.
Bohemian Rhapsody?
No.
What? We Will Rock You?
No.
We Are the Champions?
No.
What?
I know.
Crazy Little Thing Called Love.
Yes.
Okay.
Under Pressure?
Mm-mm.
Somebody Love?
No.
Fat Bottom Girls?
No.
Killer Queen?
No.
Radio Gaga?
No. Depicted in the film, this is one of the songs that stopped an argument.
Oh, the...
Another One Bites the Dust.
Yes. Shocking. They have like 15 number ones in the UK,
right.
But only those two.
Only two in America.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually surprised that they were touring in the Midwest at that time and place.
We just pretended. It's like, look at that straight arrow of a man up there.
We talked about this. This is everybody was messing around with gender roles. It was the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Number one.
Fine.